Nandam. Unto Nanda, the father of Krishna. Cha. Also. Mokshati. Saves. Bayat. Excuse me. From the fear of. Varunasya. Of Varuna. The demigod of water. Pachat, from the clutches of Gopan, the coward men, Videshu, in the caves of the mountain, Pihitan, placed Maya Sununa, by the son of Maya, Cha, also. Ani apritam, being very engaged during the daytime. Nishi, at night. Shayanam, lying down. Atishramena, because of hard labor. Lokam, planet. Vikuntam, the spiritual sky. Upaneshyati, he awarded. Gokulam, the highest planet. Smath, certainly. Translation. Lord Krishna saved his foster father, Nanda Maharaj, from the fear of the demigod Varuna and released the coward boys from the caves of the mountain, for they were placed there by the son of Maya. Also, to the inhabitants of Vrindavan who were busy working during daytime and sleeping soundly at night because of their hard labor in the day, Lord Krishna awarded promotion to the highest planet in the spiritual sky. All these acts are transcendental and certainly prove, without any doubt, his godhead or godhood. So you can repeat. Lord Krishna saved his foster father, Nanda Maharaj, from the fear of the demigod Varuna, and released the coward boys from the caves of the mountain, for they were placed there by the son of Maya. Also to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who were busy working during daytime and sleeping soundly at night because of their hard labor in the day, Lord Krishna awarded promotion to the highest planet in the spiritual sky. All these acts are transcendental and certainly prove, without any doubt, his godhood. So, purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Haribo. Ananda Maharaj, the foster father of Lord Krishna, went to take his bath in the river Yamuna in the dead of night, mistakenly thinking that the night was over. Thus, the demigod Varuna took him to the Varuna planet just to have a look at the personality of Godhead Lord Krishna, who appeared there to release his father. Actually, there was no arrest of Nanda Maharaj by Varuna because the inhabitants of Vrindavana were always engaged in thinking of Krishna in constant meditation on the personality of Godhead in a particular form of samadhi or trance of bhakti yoga. They had no fear of the miseries of material existence. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that to be in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and by full surrender and transcendental love, frees one from the miseries inflicted by the laws of material nature. Here it is clearly mentioned that the inhabitants of Vrindavana were extensively busy in the hard labor of their day's work, and due to the day's hard labor, they were engaged in sound sleep at night. So practically, they had very little time to devote to meditation or to the other paraphernalia of spiritual activities. But factually, they were engaged in the highest spiritual activities only. Everything done by them was spiritualized because everything was dovetailed in their relationship with Lord Sri Krishna. The central point of activities was Krishna, and as such, the so-called activities in the material world were saturated with spiritual potency. That is the advantage of the way of bhakti yoga. One should discharge one's duty on Krishna's behalf, and all one's actions will be saturated with Krishna thought, the highest pattern of trance in spiritual realization. So, Nandam cha mokshate vayad varunasya pashad gopan bileshu pitan mayasununacha anya pritam nishi shayanam atishwamena lokam vikuntam upaneshyati gokulam sma. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in this particular chapter, we're talking about the Lord's scheduled incarnations, and it is firmly established that Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. And it's very interesting if we contrast the activities in the other spiritual planets and also the activities of the devotees of the other incarnations of the Lord. Krishna's activities and Krishna's spiritual planet has very many unique features to it that are not found in the other planets in the spiritual world. And Krishna himself exhibits four characteristics according to Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we know as the Nectar of Devotion. He exhibits four characteristics that are only exhibited in the Krishna Loka Planet. Does anyone know those four characteristics? Krishna has 64 characteristics, but four only are exhibited in Krishna Loka. What are they?
He is surrounded by devotees who are endowed with wonderful love of Godhead.
Yes, intimate love of Godhead, right. And what's that? What are the other three? What?
Beauty.
Well, beauty. Unexcelled beauty. That's right. Unexcelled beauty of any of the other incarnations. What are the other two? Yeah.
Playing flute.
Plays a flute. And.
Surrender by.
So surrender is always there in all the Vaikuntha planets. That's a good answer. Rasa, pastimes. Intimate pastimes. You know, loving devotees, intimate pastimes, plays a flute and unexcelled beauty. So these are only exhibited. And especially the intimate pastimes, they're under the influence of Krishna's potency known as Yoga Maya. And under the Yoga Maya potency, we find that the devotees indeed forget that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And indeed, Krishna forgets he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And indeed, Srimati Radharani forgets that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they engage in all these wonderful pastimes that are not only based on worship, but many of the pastimes in Vrindavan are based upon devotees chastising the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we know, when we chant the Damodarashtaka prayers, that Krishna takes more pleasure when Mother Yashoda is running after him with a stick and attempting to tie him to the grinding mortar, then he takes more pleasure in those activities than he takes with all the prayers of the personified Vedas. So this Goloka planet, Goloka Vrindavan planet, is the goal of all of us in the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said that. It's a goal of all of us, so all of us should be thinking about that. Of course, at this present time, we don't understand what our siddha-deha is. Siddha-deha means your eternal spiritual form in the spiritual world. But that is actually a goal. We should understand that is one of the goals, to understand what is our relationship, eternal relationship. Of course, we do have a relationship that is common, and common denominator to all devotees, and that's Jivara Svarupa Hoy Nitya Krishna Das, and that's for all of us, we're eternal servants, and that's illustrated by Srila Prabhupada's explanation in this verse, that the residents of Vrindavan were so busy in serving Krishna that they had no problems sleeping at night. Now, some of us may have problems sleeping at night, isn't it? So we may have to take some sleeping pills or bananas, or somebody hot milk and bananas. So if we're having problems sleeping at night, it may indicate that we're not working hard enough for Krishna during the day, isn't it? You know, taking this, you know, the indirect meaning of this particular purport. And one may say, well, why should one be working hard during the day? You know, Krishna consciousness is meant for, like, vacation, no hard work. And we find this philosophy prominent amongst many devotees, you know. I remember being in Los Angeles in the early days that devotees would show up at work, different types of work, whether they work for the BBT or work for Spiritual Sky or something. They'd show up at work at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then at 1 o'clock, I think, was time for lunch prasadam. So they'd take a break for lunch prasadam, you know, an hour break. Then they would get tired after lunch prasadam. And they would say, Prabhupada would take a nap, so everyone would take a two-hour nap after lunch prasadam. And they'd show up for work, if we were lucky, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Again, and then at 5 o'clock, it was quitting time. So I was one of the managers. I was actually one of the managers of the Spanish BBT at that time. So I was always very frustrated, thinking, you know, just, you know, because I had more of a work ethic. For one reason or other, I'm not saying I was better, but I was just brought up in a different situation. So it was a very frustrating circumstance. Until Srila Prabhupada ordered us to produce 17 books in 2 months. Then it became nectar. It was like Vrindavan then. Because during that period of time, people actually worked so hard that not only were they tired, but they gave up sleep. People were working 24 hours a day. I mean, there's no time for noon siesta. Siesta, that's a Spanish word. That means after. Actually, incidentally, you know, devotees like to take a little rest after prasadam in the afternoon, not get back to work until late, and saying that it was Prabhupada's example. Prabhupada's example is also to sleep like 2 hours a night. So if you can do that, you can take a two-hour nap after lunch. So, oh, getting back to the story. So we actually experienced devotees in samadhi, a whole community of devotees in samadhi during that period of time. You know, those 2 months when we were producing 17 books in 2 months. And it was amazing. It's like we had all transcended the material world and gone back to home, back to Godhead. I mean, I had that feeling. And it wasn't just my imagination. I mean, it's not that I'm an advanced devotee or anything like that, but we had, all of us, we were just like so happy. And then after the 2 months, it got back to normal. And for me, it was like misery. You know, again, you know, 2 hours of work a day for everybody. So, but people say, oh, you have to be Krishna conscious and everything like that. But Bhagavad Gita, there's a very interesting verse in Bhagavad Gita that states, Brahmarpanam brahmahavya brahmagno brahmanohutam brahmatena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. Some of you may know this verse. This verse literally means that if one engages in work for Brahman, and it equates work, Krishna conscious work, to havya. Havya means like the havi, like the ghee in the fire, butter. That's the Sanskrit word for butter or ghee. Just like if you're performing a fire sacrifice, what you're taking the ghee and you're going to put it in the fire and you're saying what swaha, swaha, swaha each time. And the ghee becomes purified. And Prabhupada said even the smoke from the fire is purifying you. It's not like, you know, the non-devotees are smoking cigarettes. That cigarette smoke doesn't purify you. It gives you cancer. But the smoke from the fire, the sacrificial fire, you breathe it and you get purified. And you don't get cancer from that. Because everything's being offered to Krishna. By offering that substance to Krishna, it becomes spiritualized, exactly what Srila Prabhupada is stating here. So that substance for us doesn't mean always being absorbed in ghee sacrifices, but it means sacrificing our time. In other words, this verse says, by making a full contribution to Brahman, by work, Brahma karma. Now the word karma is misunderstood sometimes by devotees. Karma doesn't mean simply karmic activities. It means work. The word karma can be understood differently according to the context in which it's used. Sometimes it means a reaction. Sometimes it means sinful activity or activities that will give you a reaction, such as in the case of vikarma, or karma, which means good activities in this world. And sometimes it means just plain old work, you know, any type of work. You know, this Krishna karma, for example, which means work for Krishna. So, in other words, in our Krishna consciousness movement, our samadhi is meant to be absorbed in a particular type of work according to our psychophysical nature. And this is what Krishna is advising Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna doesn't want to do his work. He wants to try some work that is not his own, such as sannyas or renouncing things. And Krishna says you can be forced to do it anyway, but better you do it for me. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, be absorbed in this, and this is your spiritual activity, not going to the Himalayas and renouncing the battle, but being absorbed in what I'm telling you to do. So for us, that's what it means to do. You know, we have a specific mission. That mission, of course, is the Sankirtan mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you're all fortunate here because you're engaged in the very heart of that Sankirtan mission, which is book publication, book distribution, publication, translation, etc. And if you absorb yourselves in that way, that's samadhi. I mean, you're back to Godhead immediately when you do that. And that's really what the residents of Vrindavan do. Of course, at the same time, we do have to have sadhana. I'm not advocating passion. You know, that just everybody just works at the computer 24 hours a day and doesn't chant their rounds or whatever. And doesn't eat. And we have to have a balanced life, balanced eating, sleeping, and certainly the sadhana. Sadhana is extremely important so that we have the potency to carry out our particular activities for Krishna. So this is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. You know, and of course they're doing so many different activities for Krishna. In the Vaishnava literatures, just like I'm studying one literature now by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, describing the eightfold pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's an advanced literature. I'm not going to mention the name of it. But it describes the Ashtakalya Leela of the Lord. And it's interesting how during all those times, the residents of Vrindavan are extremely awake and extremely working hard, and even anxiety about their activities. You know, you think, like Prabhupada said one time, Prabhupada said, you know, I joined the Krishna conscious movement to be free of anxieties, now we got more anxieties. But the residents, isn't it? Kind of just say, oh, I joined the movement, what did I get? I'm working so many years and I'm anxiety, all these hairs are gray, or they're falling out involuntarily. So the residents of Vrindavan, it's so interesting. They're always in anxiety about serving. It's just like when Krishna wakes up in the morning. Actually, Krishna does it in the early morning before the sunrise. You know, Krishna is with his associates, particularly the gopis and Radharani. And he's woken up by Vrinda and some of the other residents because they're all worried about Krishna getting back home in time. It's interesting. Because if Krishna doesn't get back home in time, what will happen? Mother Yashoda will enter his room and won't find him there. And that'll be a disaster. You know, it should be an anxiety. The little boy is not home. But even worse, if Radharani doesn't get home in time, what happens? Does anyone know? There's several interesting characters in Radharani's home. Jatila, Kutila, and Abhimanyu. You all know who they are? Jatila is Radharani's mother-in-law. And there's a real hellish mother-in-law for you. And, you know, she's pretty ugly according to Krishna's definition in the Nectar Devotion, you know. Different parts of her body are described. Yeah. Anyway, so they're just waiting to find fault in Radharani. And so the point I'm making is that the residents of Vrindavan are in so much anxiety to wake Radha and Krishna up so that they'll get home in time, so they're just like completely immersed in that service. And Radha and Krishna, of course, they get up and then they go back to sleep or whatever. Not actually sleep, of course, like we know it. But then they're pushing, you gotta get home, you gotta get home. And they arrange for them to be home. And then after they're home, what happens is Mother Yashoda wakes Krishna up. She's in anxiety over Krishna. Why is she in anxiety over Krishna? Because Krishna won't wake up when she asks him to wake up, because it appears like he's still very tired. Of course, he was up the whole night. You know, certainly you'll be tired if you're up the whole night. So he was up the whole night, and then she's in anxiety about that, and then she looks at his body, and there's all these scratches and everything on it from the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And she's thinking, oh, my little boy shouldn't be out hurting the cows anymore. She's thinking it's coming from the cows in the pasture and the thorns out there. And so she's in anxiety about that. And then she sees that Krishna's still a little dirty, and she thinks, you know, he has the like cudgel all over his body and other things. She thinks, oh, they didn't bathe him properly. She's in anxiety about that. The point I'm making is that there's continual anxiety in the spiritual world. Like Prabhupada also said, that if you're looking for a utopia, you're not going to find it in the spiritual world, or in the material, certainly not the material world. The material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. You know, I've been studying about the material world. I've been studying a little bit. It's interesting that different philosophers have different theories about different systems of societal organization that'll make everything perfect. I mean, some people say that the communism, Karl Marx was in favor of communism. Other people say, you know, the democratic system is pretty good. Other people say anarchism, you know, anarchy is real cool. But any of these systems, even the monarchical system, unless you have Lord Ramchandra as the king, there's problems. There's conflicts. There's no solution to the material problems. And the solutions that we pick are actually oftentimes, most of the times, according to Prahlad Maharaj, worse than the problem to begin with. And then in the spiritual world, there's problems too. But those problems are nectar. They're actually loving problems. So thus I say, so getting back to the point, Mother Yashoda has some anxiety, and then she's in anxiety when she's finally feeding Krishna after she wakes him up, because Krishna doesn't eat enough. She's afraid that he's going to starve to death. Nice, isn't it? When you think about, you know, poor little Krishna, he's not eating enough. Of course, in the universal form, he eats everything. Everything, even people. But there is Mother Yashoda forgetting that Krishna is God, or not knowing that Krishna is God under the influence of Yoga Maya. And she's in anxiety, Krishna, eat enough, you have to eat more. And she feeds Krishna such a breakfast that would kill any of us. There's like thousands of varieties of sweet cakes. I mean, it sounds attractive, but you would die if you ate this. And so many different types of laddus, manohara laddus, and different types of, you know, vegetables and fried things. And Krishna's made to eat all these things because Mother Yashoda is in anxiety. Anyway, I don't want to go through all the different times of the day, but it's very enlivening to hear about Krishna's activity in the residence of Vrindavan. But in any case, they're fully absorbed in all their emotions, whether it's anxiety, and then you also have the emotion of anger that's there sometimes. Yashoda Mai gets angry at Krishna. Krishna wants to get the other residents of Vrindavan, like Radharani, angry at him, so he talks to the associates of Chandravali, which is the so-called competitor of Radharani. So he really wants to stir up anger in his devotees sometimes. He wants to stir up anxiety, he wants to stir up anger, he wants to stir up enthusiastic work. And just like in these stories we're reading here in this particular purport about the demons, I mean, Krishna stirred up a lot of anxiety there. There's two demons that are mentioned here. Not demons, actually. But I'll mention the story. The first one, of course, is the story of Nanda Maharaj getting kidnapped. He wasn't kidnapped exactly by Varuna, but by a demoniac associate of Varuna. And this demoniac associate of Varuna kidnapped Nanda Maharaj because he was bathing right before the sunrise. But Nanda Maharaj had a good reason for it. The reason was, it was the Dwadasi day, which comes right after the Ekadasi, and you're supposed to take a bath before you take prasadam. And he only had only a few moments left. And the Dwadasi, the time for breaking the fast just was just like coming very, very, very short. So he was in anxiety, so he took his bath at a time that was normally inappropriate, but at that particular time it was appropriate. Plus he was a resident of Vrindavan. Plus he was Krishna's eternal father, so there's nothing he could do that's inappropriate in any way. So this demoniac associate of Varuna arrested him and took him down to Varuna's planet, Varuna's abode. And Krishna went to rescue, but Varuna was very happy he was able to see Krishna. But this caused a lot of anxiety, because when Nanda Maharaj disappeared into the waters, everyone was running around in complete anxiety. So there's the spiritual world, another anxiety pastime, isn't it? Interesting. So you become a Krishna conscious pure devotee, and then you get to eternal anxiety. But that's love. It's like a mother with a child is an anxiety over the child's welfare, isn't it? Any of you who are mothers or fathers, you know that. If you have a little baby, isn't it? Isn't it, Mukunda? There's little children in anxiety. Are they crying? What's the problem? And if I say to you, give it up, take sannyas, you'll say, no. You heartless sannyasi. Right? Because that's love. You actually like being in anxiety. Even in the material world, when there's love, one loves to be in anxiety, isn't it? With the children. I see that with the parents. Or just sometimes... like if one happens to be a spiritual master responsible for others, then they're in anxiety over their disciples and people who are dependents. And, you know, my disciples are very expert in giving me anxiety. It's love. But in any case, that's love. You don't want to give it up. That's love. That's life. You don't want to become just some meditator sitting and just chanting Brahman all the time. Is that happiness? You know, chant Brahman. Of course, Brahman is a little bit happy because you're giving up the miseries of the material world. You know, that's cool. But that's not happiness compared to relationships. Relationships, connections. That's the happiness that we get, isn't it? Loving relationships. Like Prabhupada said, we have a loving propensity. And we're not satisfied because the loving propensity is not being fully invested in Krishna. We're invested in so many other things. And those other things cause us anxiety, but they don't give us bliss. That's interesting. I mean, just like I was in, just recently in Govardhan, and one of my disciples has a little daughter, and the little daughter adopted a rabbit. You know, a rabbit. And she was giving her love to the rabbit, and I could see it was causing her great anxiety. And I was thinking, if I love Krishna so much as she loves that rabbit, I'd be a pure devotee by now. So I was begging the Govardhan, please give me the same love that she feels a rabbit for you. So anxiety is part of love. Working hard is part of love. Just like you see, many times people who are not in Krishna consciousness are working so hard and doing activities that to me would be torture. I mean, sometimes, I'll give you one example. Sometimes I go into the bank to make a deposit. And I see the bank teller, the person sitting behind the counter. They're sitting in this little booth for 8 hours a day. I mean, if you asked me to sit in a booth like this big for 8 hours a day, I'd say, you are crazy. I would go crazy. So they're sitting there, but in that booth where the little bank teller, and they're not even counting their own money. That would be nectar if you were counting your own money, isn't it? All day long. They don't get to keep any of it. That's double torture, isn't it? You count money that you never get to keep, and if you even think of keeping it, you probably put you in jail. And you get to sit in a little booth this big. But then I noticed inside that booth there's a picture of who? Their family. Not of Krishna, but unfortunately. There's a family. They're little children and their wife. And every time they get a little discouraged, they look over the picture. And they feel, wow, got to stay here. So that's love. Love means relationship, anxiety, working hard, hankering, things like that. That's the spiritual love. So the second story told here is also a very interesting story of anxiety. And that's in that story, Krishna was in anxiety over the welfare of his coward boys. So it's mentioned here, the son of Maya. That's very interesting. Does anyone know who that is? The son of Maya placed the coward boys in the caves. Who's the son of Maya? What's that? No, it's not Brahma in this case. But it's let me explain further. Maya, in this case, means Maya Danava. And Maya Danava had a son. His name was Vyomasura. Vyomasura, he's one of the demons mentioned in the Krishna book. And Vyomasura, he came and took the form of a coward boy. The cows were being herded, and the calves were being herded by the coward boys at that particular time. And the coward boys, they were playing games. Our little children play games. And the game they were playing was thieves and robbers. Like all of us played robbers and police or something like that. Did anybody play that when they were young?
Cops and robbers.
Yeah, cops and robbers. Cops and robbers. Whatever. So they were playing this game, and in this particular case, the robbers were robbing sheep. And some of the coward boys took the position of sheep, and some of the people took the coward boys took the position of the robbers. You know what I'm saying? So what happened is that this Vyomasura took the form of a coward boy, and he was stealing, as what was apparently part of the game, he was stealing the other coward boys and putting them into a cave. And he was sealing the cave with a rock. And so all the coward boys kept, you know, Krishna was playing the game with his friends. And the coward boys kept disappearing. And Krishna was wondering, where are my coward boys going? He was in anxiety. Right? And finally he realized this Vyomasura was there. It was a demon. The coward boy was actually Vyomasura. And he grabbed him. He threw him to the ground. I mean, even there's violence in the spiritual world. And this is, of course, in Gokula Vrindavan. In Goloka Vrindavan, there's not actual demons, of course. They talk about them sometimes. Some coward boys may act like them, but there's no actual demons. So he threw him to the ground, and it's described that Krishna's like a wrestler. He strangled him like this. Isn't that nice? Anyway, it's nice. When Krishna does something, that's nice. I don't like wrestling normally. So Krishna strangled him, and then he rescued the coward boys. So there was an instance of Krishna being in anxiety. Also when Krishna, another story that's not mentioned here, but when Krishna saved the coward boys from the Agasura, he was in anxiety, isn't it? And they were marching into the Agasura demon, that means the big snake demon, and Krishna was thinking, what am I going to do? You know, he was a little bewildered there. That's Yogamaya. You understand? Krishna forgot that he was God. Because there can't be any enjoyment as long as Krishna remembers that he's God, you know. If he remembers he's God, he says, oh, no problem. Kill. But if he forgets he's God, he can go into the mouth of the Agasura, save the coward boys, become a big hero, and relieve his own anxiety. So, anyway, so this is the point that's being made here, that if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to be ready to accept responsibility, anxiety, burden on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, both in the sadhana stage and in the perfect stage. This is actually the message that we have here. So that means practical thing for us, let's engage fully in Prabhupada's movement. Practical, spreading this movement. Book distribution, book publication, preaching Krishna consciousness, like Mukunda's doing the universities like that. Whatever it is according to our own capacity. And, you know, no idle mind, as Prabhupada said, idle mind is what? Devil's workshop. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagno brahmano hutam brahmatena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, psychological trauma. Yes? No anxiety. No material anxiety. Yes, in the Vaikuntha planets, there is no, the other Vaikuntha planets other than Krishna Loka. Because there's God, they're worshipping in awe and reverence. They're remembering Krishna's God all the time. And Krishna's remembering that he's God in the form of Narayana. He's remembering he's God. So where's the cause of anxiety? It's just, everything is beautiful. So we can go there if we like. But the pleasure available in Krishna Loka is infinitely greater than in the Vaikuntha planets. Because it's a pleasure of relationships, of intimate relationships, like that. That's real pleasure. Isn't it? I mean, of course, the Vaikuntha planets is real pleasure, too. I don't want to denigrate the Vaikuntha planets. That's real pleasure. It's wonderful. I mean, we'd be happy to be in the Vaikuntha planets. Right now, we're just immersed in the material energy. But Krishna Loka is no comparison. The activities, it's sweetness. The madhurya, the sweetness there in the Krishna Loka planet is incomparable. So, and the sweetness we can get now out of serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Srila Prabhupada said that preaching of the Krishna conscious movement is in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, specifically the gopis. Preaching in book distribution, isn't it? It's in the mood of the gopis. And I was there when Prabhupada said that, and Prabhupada said, and I might have told this story before here, I'm not sure, but when I was with Prabhupada one time, we presented a devotee to Prabhupada who had distributed 10,000 big Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month. And Prabhupada so said that he has the mercy of Krishna. You know, this devotee was completely immersed in Sankirtan. And then Prabhupada looked around at us and he saw that the rest of us were envious of this one devotee. And he said, well, you all have the mercy of Krishna. And then Prabhupada had to have the final word. He said, well, it's just like the gopis, in one sense, they're highest. And Prabhupada left it at that. And so, you know, Prabhupada smashed us, at the same time, was nice to us in that particular story. So, love means anxiety. You know, intense love means anxiety. And that has to be manifest in all the stages of our devotional service if we want to make rapid advancement. Is it? I mean, of course, Prabhupada said, we don't ask for more anxiety. One time, Prabhupada was asked about the prayers from Queen Kunti, where Queen Kunti says, you know, please let these miseries happen again and again. Apunaha bhavadarshanam, so we don't see repeated birth and death. And Prabhupada said, we don't have to pray like that. There's already enough miseries. And we're not in the platform of Queen Kunti. But at the same time, if we remain enthusiastic in spite of these things, the Bhagavatam verse is, what is it? Tate na kampam sushamikshmana bhunjanabhatma katam vipakam ribhava purvir vidadan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadayabhak. If one remains enthusiastic that is serving Krishna with his mind, body, and words in spite of all apparent reverses and problems in the material world, then he becomes the rightful inheritor of pure devotional service. I mean, this is Lord Brahma's prayer. So we can see that this is our methodology becoming clear. Or Prabhupada said, you know, work now, samadhi later. You know, there's a Prabhupada really summarized this whole discussion in that one phrase. Prabhupada was expert in that. Work now, samadhi later. So, any other questions? Prabhupada, any questions?
Have you seen in America somewhere or anywhere in the world, Vaisheshika's way of distributing smart boxes?
Yeah, we're using
that somewhere?
Yeah. We're using it in some of my temples. And in fact, I just got a message this morning about some of the smart boxes.
How good is it?
Really good. I mean, it was a funny story this morning. I just got an email about it.
I would like to start it here in Sweden.
That they've been putting in gas, you know, petrol stations and in other places. I have to remember all the details of the letter, but someone was so enthusiastic to get Prabhupada's books, they stole all the books out of one of the smart boxes. I mean, it's all right. I mean, but what can be done? So we have big smart boxes and small smart boxes. They're actually like machines, you know, they put the money in. And we put them in Hindu stores, we put them in gas stations, we put them all sorts of things. And it's been very successful. Very, very successful. It's amazing. And Most people on the honor system do leave money, and you do get a substantial amount of money from it.
Does everybody know what the smart box is?
No.
I'm not sure. I don't think
so. Well, smart boxes are like a stack of books, you know, basically with a little box for money. They're different ones. There's big ones and small ones.
The system is like the Lions Club.
Yeah, so yeah, you exactly.
See this, you see this little this candy with the Lions Club? So you take something, you can throw it with the
Yeah, yeah.
And Vaisheshika has kind of perfected that
mm-hmm.
books. So, but I have never seen it in reality, so that's why I asked you.
Yeah, it's good you asked the question, because even, like I said, even this morning I got some notice about how well they're doing. And the devotees are getting more enthusiastic to get more smart boxes and put them all around town.
It's for mainly for the congregation. You know, the congregation gets an area.
Mm-hmm.
Say somebody would say, I take care of Vesteros, and he lives there in Vesteros. Now he gets 15, 20 smart boxes. It costs
mm-hmm.
maybe $150 for a whole kit for maybe 10 or so. It's mm-hmm. not very expensive. And then he places them in restaurants, gas stations, supermarkets, whoever lets, you know, you have seen this Lions Club thing? You see this candy, you take a candy, you go into a store and you take a candy thing and they say put 10 crowns in, but it's the honor system.
Honor system, yeah.
You just mentioned, you have to be honest, right? And on that principle, it's book distribution, and the devotees say investors would simply go around once a week and refill. I think that's the
right. Yeah, they refill and they take the money, of course, too.
They take the money and refill and have some kind of a regional manager who supplies them with the books.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of a grid.
Yeah, they account for them like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a grid, like one of these charts, you know, organizational charts.
Yeah.
One person, then another person, then each person takes care of other people.
Right.
Yeah.
And in America, it starts happening?
It's happening. I mean, at least we're doing it in my zone. And it's been very successful.
Nice. So it's not that people just run off with all the books and
No, we had one case that was the case, but I think they just wanted to read all the books. But generally, they're smaller books
uh-huh.
in the smart boxes. At least the ones we're doing are actually the small books.
Uh-huh. So you don't put hardcover.
The ones we're doing, he's doing them, I think, sometimes with hardcover, but we're generally doing it with the smaller books. Yeah.
Pocket books,
yeah.
Okay.
But they've been very successful. I mean, they're ordering more. I mean, that's the notice I got this morning. The devotees are ordering more boxes. They're so successful.
I've ordered one kit. I think it's 10 boxes of the kit itself. And I've ordered one. I would like to start doing this.
Is it you put it on the wall or you put it on the table?
On the table.
Table. Table. They go on the table. There's different. There's the freestanding ones
okay.
you can get.
Oh.
And then there's table ones. Oh. Probably the ones you order are the table ones.
Well, I asked them for a kit. And,
yeah. I mean, there's different sizes.
And there's a number of different volumes, and each has three or four.
You stack it with the volumes you want to put in there.
Mm-hmm. What does volumes mean?
The books.
The books, there's like three or four different books, and there's like 10 or so of each.
It depends on the size. Some of them have two stacks, and you could put like different books there. Some of them are just for one type of book.
And there's a box there with a metal box with a lock.
Yeah,
where
you
put the money in the slot where.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. 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 Like you see in any supermarket, they sometimes have little tin cans or glass jars or something like that. Similar thing to that.
So a stack, they're all the same? The same book.
In the smaller ones, yeah.
Okay.
In the bigger ones, you can have two stacks.
But it's not a machine that you have to put money
in. No.
You could take all of them.
No. It's not like the newspaper machine. You put some money in, you just get one newspaper. Someone could take all of them.
I think that would work well in Sweden because it's kind of a little, you know, it's...
Mm-hmm. People are shy.
They're a little more shy and I think it would be more, it would be easier for them to say, okay, I'll try this out instead of having to commit in a personal transaction.
That's true because it's difficult for people who are shy to relate to the people they don't know. So.
And to something new.
This way, without being seen, they can just sneak over and get a book. Because I remember even before I joined the movement, I mean this was years before, I didn't want to speak to the devotees, but I wanted to read Prabhupada's books. Why didn't I want to speak to the devotees? Because they would always ask me for money. But I definitely want, and even when I went, there's a funny story, even when I went to the temple to read Prabhupada's books, the devotees wouldn't let me read Prabhupada's books. I said, I just want to sit here and read Prabhupada's books. And they said, no, you're not qualified. You have to hear me preach to you about it first. You're not qualified to read it without my guidance. And you know, this is a 20-year-old kid, he was telling me that. And I was also 20-year-old. It's not that. So I said, but please let me read. No, I can't read. So yeah, there's a lot of people who would read Prabhupada's books if we give them the opportunity. So it's a great device. I highly recommend it.
What about the permission to play?
Oh, you got to get permission.
You ask these people, but in America, apparently, by Jesus. Fishing, because they're very, very open and they like it, that they can do something for a good cause.
Yeah, they love it.
I mean, you see these Lions Club sponsors everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to a shop and buy car tires and he's got a Lions Club box.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen those? No. That is for producing those? You see
them. It's everywhere. And
everywhere.
And in America, all the motels are owned by Indian people.
Oh.
So we could put one in the lobby of every single hotel, motel, Patel.
Indian restaurants would be great for this.
Yeah, it's unlimited. It's an unlimited menu for book distribution. And I'm real excited about it.
Me too.
And it definitely would work well here, where people are shy.
Oh.
Here, Finland, and you know all the Scandinavian countries, it would work well.
Oh.
I wouldn't do it in the Balkans or.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at least certain countries.
Oh.
That I'm picking up, but at least these, you know, Western European countries, I think would work pretty well. Some of the Eastern European countries, they'd steal it or steal money.
Yeah, and then sell them for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would be the.
It has to be countries with somewhat good economy.
Good economy, yeah, where people have some morals.
Mm-hmm.
And respect other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's said that devotees who are engaged in dominical work, like sannyasis or gurus,
mm-hmm.
that they should be protected from this anxiety of managing, say, money and...
I don't know. Nobody protects me. I think, you know, Prabhupada wasn't protected. Prabhupada said you should do this. He does. He give the Bhagavatam class in the morning and go to the bank in the evening, isn't it? Of course, you know, I'm not going to the bank enough, but I wish I was. But, it's a joke. But in any case, I mean, Prabhupada's example, we have to be well-rounded as leaders. I don't think Prabhupada really gave us the example of, like, a detached sannyasi who did nothing but brahminical activities. I mean, if there are people like that, that's wonderful. But, a leader means we have to be responsible. I mean, I have to be responsible for so many things. I mean, not just, like we're building a temple, I'm responsible for the design of the temple, raising the money for the temple, you know, dealing with the government for the temple. Now, I don't feel I'm violating my dharma by doing that. I mean, you know what a sannyasi's dharma is? That's described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, don't wear fine clothes, don't eat opulent foodstuffs, and don't think of, you know, ladies in the sense of, you know, enjoying ladies even in dreams. Those are the three injunctions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave for sannyasis. So I think that's what we should adhere to. But we're meant to be practical. And sannyasis should do everything, and, you know, not everything, but, you know, many things. And grahasas can do everything. Isn't it? I mean, I don't want to be protected from those things. I want to do my service for Prabhupada.
So devil's advocate, I would say that this is antinomianism.
Yeah, can you define what that means?
What's the exact word? Antinomianism, right?
Nomianism.
Well, you got to define it for me. I'm not that educated.
I saw this discussion. It was on a blog there in... Actually, it was Kripa Maya Prabhu. It was a very good article called Good Men Keeping Good Men Good.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big discussion about that. You were also involved in it. That's why it is.
Oh, I just, I don't get involved in those discussions. I just send little jibes there, you know, once in a while.
Okay.
And then I step out of it.
So the antinomianism, that means basically it's thinking that one's above the law.
Oh, yeah, one shouldn't think they're above the law.
Mm.
But I don't understand what the point is.
I'm not really avowing this. I'm not trying to be envious or critical.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to understand the point intellectually. What is
that? Yeah, Prabhupada at the end thought that the devotees actually need Varnashrama and that there must be a division there of work.
Definitely. I mean, ultimately, yes, it's better the sannyasis don't manage. And the better, because because there's a conflict of interest. When you manage people and you're also responsible for their spiritual lives, you've got to balance both things and it drives you crazy, yes. I mean, that's a good point. But I think that we should be ready to do whatever Krishna wants. I mean, otherwise you end up in a stratified society where someone says that they're a Brahmin, I won't wash the bathroom. Have you ever seen that before? Yeah, that happens especially in third world countries. I've done a lot of work in Latin America. As soon as you give someone second initiation, I mean, they won't lift a hand anymore in doing any menial service. But we see the great acharyas in our sampradaya. I mean, Narahari Chakravarti Thakur is one of the greatest authors in our sampradaya. He actually didn't even reveal who he was. He was cleaning menially the temple. And we see Lokanath Goswami. He was cleaning the place where his spiritual master passed stool, which is a shudra activity, Gopalbhatta Goswami, without even letting him know. So my understanding is that ultimately that we need to realize that we're servants, ready to do whatever Krishna wants. I mean, the Varnashram is there for society's stability, but I personally would like to be able to do whatever Krishna wants too. Within, you know, reason, with the boundaries of my ashram, obviously. But Krishna's not going to ask me to violate the boundaries of my ashram. Like that. And you may say, oh, you have to protect sannyasis. Don't let them have any control over money. Don't let them have any control over anything. And then you're disempowering them, too. Like, if I have to go to a temple president and ask them for toothpaste, I can't live such a life like that. Isn't it? I mean, you expect someone to be a leader, but I want to decide where I'm going to fly to tomorrow. I'm not going to get, you know, I'm 58 years old, you know, I'm not a baby. You know, I just couldn't, could you? I mean, could you live like that where someone, you know, you just say, you know, I need a new bead bag, Prabhu. From her, Prabhu, can you give me 10 euros because I have to get a new bead bag? And I can't live like that. And if you expect it to infantilize sannyasis or leaders in our movement, then you're going to drive people away from the movement. Because we have to be treated like adults after a certain point, isn't it? It has to be trust, love and trust. So if you try to limit people's activities, like for example, you know, there's many of my godbrothers who are expert in management. I mean, like Bhakti Churumaraj is wonderful, pure Vaishnava, and he's building this great, great project in New Jain. Maybe you've heard of it. And, you know, it's by his management it's happening. I mean, I couldn't do that. I don't have the skills he has. But if we try to limit, say, oh, you're not allowed to do this, Maharaj, to sit and chant, you know, and be nice, and don't tell people how to save, spend money. And don't get involved in making money either. I mean, he set up, maybe, you know, I shouldn't tell you this, but he set up a multi-million-dollar business now in India. You'd probably know about this, Ramarita, now. One of the biggest businesses, like he's a major share, his people are the major shareholders in one of the biggest businesses. It's known by all the Indian leaders, they know about this already. And, so he's done it for Krishna. I mean, we wouldn't have a new Jain project if he didn't do that. Who would do it? So, there has to be, it can't be so stratified that we're just like caught up in little boxes. Like that, we have to be practical. And as far as protecting someone from, you know, let's say, well, we're going to protect you, Maharaj, by not letting you touch money, by not letting you decide where you're going to go tomorrow. We're going to protect you. You're not going to protect me. You're going to send me to the mental institution. Isn't it true? Yeah. And you're gonna stop a lot of service. And if I want to be in Maya, I'm gonna be in Maya anyway. Whatever you do. You know, if I decide to be in Maya, you can restrict me all you want, but I'll find a way to be in Maya. You ain't gonna stop me.
There are different people. Some probably like to be so totally cut off from any decision making and resources, and others are different. They can't handle it, and they like to.
But I don't know any sannyasis who were totally cut off. I mean, look, even the devotees like Mahadidi Maharaj, who's living in Radhakund, he's deciding on his own publication and arranging for the... I mean, here's someone who's like a real sadhu, not like me, but, you know, but he's a real sadhu, but he's doing all his management, too. Nobody's controlling his life. I don't know any sannyasis in our movement where they're actually having to go, having someone control their lives for them. I mean, even you have Smita Krishna Maharaj, who's a very humble, wonderful Vaishnava. He's deciding where he's going. It's not that does he come to you for his tickets to go to different places?
No, not to us.
No, probably has, his disciples managing some fund where he can buy his tickets to go to the Balkans or go to the... He preaches a lot in the Baltic states, too. So there has to be, you have to have love and trust. I mean, if I'm not trusted, a low trust culture, I can't live in such a culture like that. You know, obviously there has to be feedback and there has to be supervision of my activities. That's fine. I'm fine with that. You know, I report every year to the GBC, money spent, money this, that. We have a whole financial report we have to submit. And I report to Paladanda Maharaj, where I was every minute during the year. He's really finicky about that. Just really persnickety. I don't know if you know that word, but so we report. We have to be accountable. There's accountability, obviously. But too much control and you're not gonna have any leaders in the movement. Too much, you just can't run a movement like that. You gotta, and with all the devotees it should be like that too. There has to be trust. I extend trust to other devotees, do this project. You don't have to answer to me for every penny you spent. And Prabhupada did that. That's how Prabhupada developed leaders. So, I mean, there's theory, which is real nice, and we can discuss. That's why I don't get into the discussion so much on the internet. I just send a little note in, of my own philosophy. But there's theory, and then there was the rubber hits the road. You know what the rubber hits the road means? This practice. You can have so many theories, but when the rubber hits the road, the car starts moving. Sometimes it's different than the theory. So, I have a problem with people who are always dealing with theories because sometimes they're impractical. And Prabhupada was the most practical person. And Prabhupada was carrying the paper to the book printer, right? I mean, talk about practicality. And Prabhupada said we need more dynamic preachers like that. Prabhupada said we need devotees like Arjuna in our movement, fighters. And it's interesting, another point about Varnashram, Brahmins, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, they're all independent, and that includes sannyasis. Only the Shudras are actually tightly controlled in the Varnashram culture. So even if you bring in Varnashram, you don't have the sannyasis like tightly controlled, you can do this, you can't do that. Only the Shudras. Because the Shudras don't have the ability to decide for themselves. And if they have any money, what will they do? Get drunk. Like we see in America that there's a certain people who they made a lot of money, some of the American Indians, they made a lot of money real quickly because they discovered oil on the property. What do they do with the money? They were drinking. They call it fire water. Liquor. So, I mean, we should have these discussions, but I mean, ultimately we have to be practical. And also in Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said, we're a mixed caste of unknown origin. So I think most of us have propensities from all the different varnas built in, isn't it? And so we engage them in Krishna's service. Yeah, but Varnashram should be there. Prabhupada, it's another point. Prabhupada said that's the one mission, or part of his mission that was undone, 50%, was established with the Varnashram communities. So that has to be there. But Varnashram also means independence for the sannyasis. I mean, Madhavendra Puri was independent. Was anyone supervising his activities? He was given money. He kept money. You know, he bought sandalwood for Gopal. Was he told, oh, this is improper for a sannyasi to do that? He arranged, he managed this whole, what is that, the Abhishek for Gopal? Is it? He was a manager. He was the temple president of the whole Govardhan Abhishek for Madhavendra Puri. So there you have a sannyasi. And who was a better sannyasi than Madhavendra Puri? So, anyway. But I don't get into these internet discussions because they go on and on and on and on, and there's no solution. I try to stay off the internet, except for internet is meant for short letters, really, isn't it? How are you? I'm fine. Meet you tomorrow at the temple. Jai. How do you go? All glories to Prabhupada. Anytime a letter gets over two paragraphs, it's just not proper on the internet. There's actually studies of internet communication. And anytime you have discussions on the internet, it leads to fighting. Then, I mean, you can't resolve a conflict on the internet, because 96% of communication is nonverbal. It's not the words, but actually the, you know, the actions and everything like that. So whenever I have a conflict with someone, I say, you know, meet me somewhere else and we'll talk about it, but I'm not going to talk about it on the internet. Okay, what's that? We've got to end.
I want to add something quickly.
Yeah.
If you don't give a person full freedom to do what he can do, or that,
yeah,
actually,
that's right, it's a low-trust culture.
If you trust a person, he can do anything.
That's right.
If you take away something from him, then it's like...
Yeah, if you deal with someone like a baby,
yeah,
then they may either remain a baby or they'll rebel, one of the two things.
Yeah.
You know, there's two alternatives for the person. Prabhupada trusted us. Yes, a lot of devotees betrayed his trust, that's true. But a lot of devotees lived up to the trust, too. But if you trust no one, nothing will happen. So, you know, what's your alternative? Trusting or not trusting? Better to trust and get something done. And that's what Prabhupada did. So we have to do that in our movement too, with devotees. Without leadership, you're not going to have any progression in Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, I think we have to end now, because we have to trust prasadam. All glories to the divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Nagarjuna, Nagarjuna, Hari, ki jai. Gurnitai, ki jai.